to Coffee and Catastrophe, Riders on a Caffeine High, episode 15, Nuts and Bolts. We're gonna revisit Archetypes Part 2.
Sorry, I talked way too long.
Well, that's usually my job, so we'll let you have this one this time.
Hey, it's educational.
There we go. Well, since we went so long on our last podcast, we're gonna go ahead and...
essentially pick up in the middle of...
Revisit it here and pick up with, let's see,
Herald?
Okay, let's talk about the Herald then.
We also have one that's the Herald, and the Herald's kind of an interesting thing because in Harry Potter, the Herald wasn't even a person. In Harry Potter, it was a letter from Hogwarts.
Okay.
And it's like, hi, here's this postcard that says, congratulations, you've been accepted into a magic school, and, you know, suddenly that's your invitation to the other world. Sometimes it can be an event. You know, maybe the fact that somebody's walking around one day and sees an alien for the first time.
Okay.
Well, aliens don't exist. Mm-hmm. So suddenly that shows that there is this other world. R2-D2 and the projection of Princess Leia.
Yeah.
That was the message to Luke that, hey, there's more going on here than you know. Mm-hmm. And it's that invitation to the unknown or the supernatural or the magic power that gets them going.
I like that. It's the invitation.
Yeah.
I mean, literally and figuratively.
I have to think about this a little deeper because Polonius in Hamlet. Mm. I love Polonius in Hamlet because he always says everything that's going on. To the point that, I mean, it's... It is the scene of Polonius saying, I am in the scene, I am walking across the stage. You know, my favorite thing is when Hamlet and I think it's Queen Gertrude were arguing, and somebody is behind the curtains, and Hamlet had walked in on the queen, and Polonius had hidden, and he takes his sword out, and he just starts slashing into the curtains, and he goes, oh, I am slain! And it's like, he dictates that he's dead. There is no other thing other than the fact that him saying, oh, I am slain, and he falls dead to the floor. Yeah. He projected his own death quite well.
It's kind of like a narrator in a play.
Yes.
I mean, I was in many plays whenever I was younger, and sometimes you had an actual narrator. There was a Our Town, a play called Our Town, and there was a character that did a lot of the narration, specifically, of a particular situation or event. Before the storyline continued with the actual full cast. It was really interesting. Anyway.
Shapeshifter is an interesting one. That's next. The shapeshifter is a character that doesn't always show his true intentions. On Solo. He is a pirate. He is a smuggler. He's not a good person. He shoots somebody. Yes, I'm talking the first series, not the redo where Greedo shot first. But he is not a nice person. You look at
Captain
Loki.
Captain Jack. Oh, okay.
No,
Loki.
We can go with that. Okay. Loki. Loki is a friend of the gods in the beginnings of the mythology. He's a blood brother to Odin. He's friends with everybody until he takes jokes too far.
Uh-huh.
Captain Jack Sparrow.
Oh, yeah.
You never know where he's going to end up going because he's Captain Jack.
He's playing both sides.
Yeah, even Barbados doesn't like
Barbossa.
Barbossa.
Barbados is a place.
Yeah, that's true. Barbossa by Jeremy. Is his name?
Jeremy Irons.
Is it Irons? No, it's not Irons. There is an actor, Jeremy Irons, but he's not the one who plays it. Anyway, his character.
Oh, Jeffrey Rush.
Jeffrey Rush. Plays, yes.
I thought you were talking about another character's name.
No, and I gotta throw this in. He did a great movie called Quills. It's about writers.
That.
Yeah, it's might be a little rough for you. Anyway.
Like I'm some poor traumatized child.
Okay, go rent it and tell me what you think.
No, that's okay.
But you have these characters that are look like they will do one thing, but then they do something else. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it can be a romantic interest that is a romantic interest because they're trying to get something. Or maybe it is somebody that the hero thought was an ally and then ends up either being a plant or somebody that completely turns against everything that they were working on. Luke in Percy Jackson does that.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, you've got that a lot in some of your noir-type shows. You've got the woman who, or noir books, you've got the femme fatale.
Yeah, the seductress.
Yep. She's trying to get you to do something, you know, trying to get the good guy to do something, but yet at the same time, she's only doing it for her own purpose. personal interests.
Right.
And then in the end, she double-crosses you.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, you look at Han Solo, the smuggler who rescued the princess and then took the money and ran, but then at the last moment, when he was really needed, showed up mm-hmm. and actually sacrificed himself mm-hmm. to save Luke. And I say sacrificed himself because him not going to Jabba the Hutt ended up putting a bounty into on his head that was...
the carbon freeze, yep.
Yep. So, the next part we start talking about a little bit darker things. We start talking about the bad people, the antagonists. And in archetypes, there's actually two. And I think this is kind of an interesting form because you have the dragon. And the dragon...
Now, are you meaning a literal dragon or a figurative dragon?
Both, because it's been literal dragons. The Hobbit was a literal dragon.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
Because Smaug was the physical threat. Uh-huh. Smaug was what was going to kill you. Uh-huh. Darth Vader is what is going to kill you. The many, many minions of Voldemort is what is going to kill you.
Oh, you mentioned minions, and I thought for a second you were going to try to bring up Despicable Me, and I'm like, no, they're not the shadows.
You know, the people that Sherlock Holmes fought were the dragons because they were not the main threat.
Right, actually Moriarty was the main threat.
So now we get into the shadow. So we have the dragon that is the physical threat, the one that is going to physically destroy you, mm-hmm. but then we have his puppet master that works from the shadows,
which
the evil.
Moriarty.
The one that is hiding because he is the mastermind behind everything.
So, in essence, your dragon, I guess, could also kind of act a little bit as the shapeshifter, maybe. Rachel McAdams' character, I can't remember her name in Sherlock Holmes. Her character's name. Oh my gosh!
I've watched the PBS ones, the British ones.
Oh my goodness. The first Sherlock Holmes movie with Robert Downey Jr., that one was very good. Second one, not so much. But, you know, you find out, you know, she's in love with Sherlock Holmes, and yet at the same time you find out she's actually in cahoots with Moriarty.
Does she fall in love with him actually at the end?
Who?
Sherlock.
Oh, she's been in love with him for quite some time. And then when Moriarty realizes that, he realizes that she becomes a liability to his purposes because he can't trust that she is going to be able to pull the plug and kill Holmes whenever it's needed. Mm-hmm. So, or do whatever he asks her to do, whatever is needed.
And this is another one I need to think a little deeper on, because when you look at Hamlet... Mm-hmm. Claudius was the one that killed Hamlet's father.
Right.
And he is the dragon, but yet is he the shadow? Because the shadow could be several different things in Hamlet. Because the shadow could also be kind of Hamlet's own...
Psyche
that's uh-huh. working against him. Uh-huh. So, I mean, this is something...
Kind of goes also in with the whole Macbeth thing.
Yeah.
Too.
This is something that you could take into a very deep and psychological place.
Ooh, I like to play with those kind of things. Yeah.
But,
I do that in Ringing the Darkness.
Yeah.
Well, you do it too in Hell to Pay.
I do, because the devil is actually in the details.
Oh, very literally.
Yeah.
Yes.
But, you know, he is the main antagonist, but yet the interesting thing is the hero may be completely unaware of them.
You know, I have to admit, I struggled a lot with writing my shadow type characters, my antagonists, initially in my Deepest Darkness series. Mm-hmm. But I came to find that I liked those more because of the depth of the psyche that you could get into, figuring out what made them tick, what made them choose to be the bad guy.
Right.
When maybe, you know, in some ways, I kind of turned it around to where the bad guy wasn't necessarily as bad as you may have thought he was. There was a reason why he became the way he was. And I found that exploration very interesting.
Well, and in Hell to Pay, the character of George, who was ultimately the antagonist, mm-hmm. started off in a very good place. And Bailey was the one that seemed like the dragon. And as the story went on,
they
flip-flopped places because George was... possessed.
Yeah, became possessed.
And had done some very heinous things to where Bailey had kind of redeemed himself. himself, uh-huh. and pretty much sacrificed himself mm-hmm. to defeat him. And Bailey had some major issues along the way, too. Lost his mind, had the FBI after him. Yep. I mean...
did some not very nice things to some not very nice guys.
He needed it.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway. I think you needed it, too.
Oh, I did. I felt good. But, lastly, we're going to talk about the Trickster. And the Trickster...
isn't that kind of Loki, too?
It is. It is Loki. But it is a person in the story that tends to... and they're very close to the Shapeshifter. But they tend to make fun of. They tend to joke. They tend to sometimes take jokes too far. And this is where Loki really fits in.
Yeah.
Because in his character in mythology, he was originally a person that loved to play jokes on people. But as the stories go, they start getting deeper. You know, there's
He got more twisted. Enjoyment out of...
because in the mythology, he would do things like he'd drink a little too much and start really talking some scandalous stuff. And it hurt a lot of people's feelings. Or one time he decided to go and shave Thor's wife's hair completely off. And Thor is not the type of person that takes...
put up with that.
Yeah. takes that kindly, especially when his wife had beautiful hair. And as the stories go on, he becomes jealous, and he has children, and the children are essentially displaced right before his eyes because they're monstrous. Uh-huh. And his jokes start twisting and getting darker, and he starts getting jealous. And
they're not so much jokes anymore as...
right, and you
paybacks. It's like somebody who says something really horrible to your face, but they do it in such a way that people around them are kind of chuckling because,
yeah.
well, it kind of sounded like a joke, but at the same time, my ex-husband used to do that to me.
Yeah,
I actually had one of my coworkers say one time, "How can you put up with that man?
Yeah,
he is putting you down all the time, and I don't even know if you realize it." I'm like, "Oh, I'm aware of it.
Yeah,
I just try not to."
Where these jokes happen, but yet they go further and further until it's almost chaos.
Mm-hmm. Until it's sick and twisted.
Yeah, and with Loki in the Norse mythology, he becomes to the point where the god of light and love, Frigg, the wife of Odin, the mother of Baldur,
mm-hmm.
mother of the gods, has these nightmares that her son's going to die, Baldur. Baldur was loved by everybody. He was kind of the Jesus figure.
Mm-hmm.
At a point, he was the god of light and love, and he was a very powerful god, but yet everybody really just rejoiced to have him around. Mm-hmm. And so his mother
He always did things from a good perspective.
Sure.
An honorable perspective.
Yeah, honorable perspective. Mm-hmm. And his mother went around on this journey and got the promise of everything that it wouldn't harm him. And so the gods start having this bar party to where they'd set Baldur in the middle of the thing and start throwing tables, chairs, hammers, axes, arrows, other gods at him. And everything would look like it was going to hit him, and then at the last minute it deflect.
Mm-hmm.
And they tried every night, and this became a party game.
Mm-hmm.
And of course Loki stopped being the center of attention.
Mm-hmm.
And Loki hated that, so he shapeshifted as Frigga's nursemaid or maid and sat there and quizzed her every single thing in existence for 3 days, until Frigga finally snapped and said, "Mistletoe, I forgot mistletoe." I don't know why I just made Frigga sound like a very old Jewish man. But, anyway.
I mean, really, your trickster is almost narcissistic, a sociopathic
yes.
narcissist.
Yeah, Lucifer, the show Lucifer that's on right now, is one of Neil Gaiman's graphic novels.
Mm.
He's a narcissist. He's the devil. But yet, and talk about an anti-hero.
Mm.
But he's definitely a trickster, shapeshifter.
Definitely got something wrong with
yeah,
him.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. yeah. There's a few too many bats in the belfry.
But in the story, Frigga finally snaps and says, "Mistletoe, I didn't get mistletoe." And so Loki goes, "All right." Goes out, gets a sprig of mistletoe, turns it into a dart. Goes into the bar, everybody's playing Hey, Throw Everything at Baldur, walks up to his blind brother, and says, "What are you doing?" He goes, "I'm sitting here." "Why aren't you playing?" "Well, I'm blind." Puts the dart in his hand, lines him up, throws the shot, moves away because it pierces Baldur right in the heart.
Mm.
Baldur falls down dead. The gods turn on Hoder, who is his brother, this blind god of winter, and just outright slay him. And then they start putting it together and realize what Loki's done.
Yeah.
And the myth goes on that it gets pretty graphic because they end up killing...
So you know more about the Norse mythology.
Yeah, they end up killing two of Loki's sons that he was very close to. The two that he was allowed to have. And they tie him to a rock with their intestines. And then drip poison by an adder or a serpent that's over his head directly into his eyes.
Oh, gosh.
And so that's his torture from
until eternity.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And, boy, I want a really long story. That was a really long diversion on this. One thing I'll say is Neil Gaiman just put out a book on Norse mythology that is awesome.
Really?
I'm currently reading it.
When you're done, can I borrow it?
Yeah.
Okay.
He has kind of taken the old Norse myths and put it into his own brand of storytelling.
Hmm.
And it's interesting. I'll just call it interesting.
Okay, we'll call it interesting. You heard it here first. Yeah. It's interesting.
I'm not really finding out anything new.
Uh-huh.
I had absolutely forgotten that one of my characters in Aristid, I forgot that I named her after a forgotten Norse goddess.
Who?
Lothan.
Lothan? Oh my gosh, I love her.
Lothan is the goddess of marriage and care.
Which she's a midwife Aristid. Yeah. Okay,
cool. I totally forgot I did that.
Uh-huh.
But... wow, I have really talked a long time about that. That is essentially the archetypes or the stereotypes. Now,
I like that, stereotypes, because I think a lot of people do get confused over the difference between stereotypes versus archetypes, because I know I've heard archetypes used as, like I was playing around earlier, oh, does that mean they're elves, dwarves,
yeah.
you know, different, you know, man or beast or
right. and,
whatever, and it's like, but no, there are, that's not necessarily true
but
in this
still,
case.
There are stereotypes to that. You think of the elves flitting in the forest
true.
And being
pointy
artsy.
Little ears
yes.
and swinging, you know, swords and arrows.
And
that...
then you have the dwarves that are mining and they're gruff and mm-hmm. they're not real happy.
And they're short and stout.
You have the trolls that are just out there
I know,
to eat
they're your ancestors, aren't they?
Not except the trolls.
They're not short. No,
oh, the dwarves? Oh, yes, they are my ancestors.
Yeah, except you got a little height gene in there.
Yeah, well, that's also because I'm 1/3 Sasquatch.
Oh, okay, that's right. I forgot.
Yes.
And there's more information than you ever wanted to know about my co-host.
But I think, the one thing I want to talk about is be careful when you write these characters. Don't make them too stereotypical.
Yeah.
You don't want the reader looking at this going, oh, wow, this guy's really a trickster.
Well, you know, it's so interesting because I think a lot of times when you get into writing and you really get going, you don't even really consciously think about, oh, I need to create this kind of a character. I need to create that kind of character. I need to make sure I've got my shapeshifter. I need to make sure I've got my hero. Because I know I don't really consciously think about these things. It's just these are the people that I end up with.
But when we talk about stereotypical characters, you need to be careful about the hero. Don't make him too pure.
Yeah.
Give him some flaws.
Yeah.
Give him something to work
against.
That's
what makes Spider-Man such a good hero.
The kid screwed up and it's the first thing he did and that's going to haunt him
forever. And it really affected him and everybody around him.
Yeah. And, you know, you look at Norse mythology. Well, no, I don't really want to use that. I've been talking a lot, teaching Norse mythology a lot here recently, and I've come to decide that everything in Norse mythology is based on what people have done.
Mm.
So you have Loki and his practical jokes going too far. You have Ragnarok. You have Frey giving away his sword, and then he's defenseless at the end of the world. You have Tyr sacrificing his hand so they can bind the wolf, Fenris wolf.
But like I was saying, though, I mean, you
cause
know,
and effect.
You don't really think about those things consciously, I don't
know.
And that's where I think it's important you avoid, I think you can avoid the stereotypes and stuff like that if you know this information and you allow your characters to come alive,
well,
you know, like we've talked about before.
Going way back to Jung, part of his belief in philosophy was that we had this connected consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And that storytelling, innate storytelling, has all this in it because we have this collective consciousness.
In us.
And we have these archetypes that have been around since cave drawings.
And we don't have to think about them really too much.
Yeah, and they just happen to just show up.
Well, that's what happens to me. It's all very organic whenever I create characters.
I plan too much.
Yeah, you're a control freak. Hey, I thought I was a control freak.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I think that's it for this one.
All right. Well, you heard it here first.
Oh, wait a second.
What?
If you want to contact us, you have questions, you have answers, you have hate mail.
Oh, please don't send us hate mail.
Send us an email at catastrophiccoffee@gmail.com.
Well, and I am D.A. Bale.
And I am William Brian Johnson.
And we will see you next time, or we'll be here next time you can listen to us.
Take care.